Hello, everyone. Good afternoon, good evening, good night, good morning, wherever you are, whenever you are. It's Abdullah Samir, your favorite friendly neighborhood ex-Muslim. I'm joined with a friend of mine, someone I've known for a couple of years online, but we never met. We hope to meet one day, but just didn't happen yet. A friend of mine, ex-Muslim, who I've known for a couple of years from the U.S., and he is anonymous now. He has a couple of things, many things he wants to talk about. We've been thinking about having this conversation for a while now. So we are now on episode 67 of the podcast, which is crazy. It's just insane how these things happen. So if those of you were listening to it on YouTube, do remember you can also get it in podcast format. It's available on all the podcast platforms. Jamal, how's it going?
It's going good, Abdullah. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's get into it. So what's on your mind?
Yeah, so a little brief overview. Mainly, I want to talk about how the group of ex-Muslims or people who have left Islam or whatever you want to call it, former Muslims, people who once believed Islam was true, no longer do. I want to talk about how this is an actual minority group and that Muslims do marginalize and are intolerant of this minority group just the same way other dominant groups are intolerant and marginalize their minority groups. And I also want to kind of show how, and when you bring this up, many people just assume they think of this dichotomy like, oh, well, those are you're talking about the bad Muslims, the extremist Muslims. And I want to show how, no, it's just like with any other minority group, the intolerance and marginalization comes at varying degrees. People, we experience it to varying degrees, and they inflict it on us to varying degrees. And I want to kind of highlight and show how even the non-practicing, non-religious Muslim plays a hand in this. Yeah. I also want to kind of also show how, and also want to kind of list all these things where if we could actually talk to Muslims, okay, and actually say, hey, sit down and listen. You need to listen. You need to hear this perspective that you are ignorant of due to your lack of experiences. Because a lot of Muslims now, thankfully, in terms of, you know, it's racial injustice and all that stuff, they're getting more and more, you know, kind of progressive, left-leaning, and these issues of minorities and this whole dynamic of dominant groups and minority groups, they're starting to agree with a lot of these ideas. And when they know that, hey, white people do this to people of color, men do this to women, straight people do this to LGBTQ people, and then just simply by the fact that they are a minority, you know, these dominant groups, they are not qualified to say that, hey, I have nothing to listen to. You have nothing to say that I need to hear. You need to speak to somebody else. You know, it's like, it's a lot like white people saying, hey, I don't need to hear the experiences of people of color. I'm not in the KKK. I'm not a white supremacist. You know, no, it's, you know, you don't have to be a white supremacist. A lot with women or the Me Too movement, you know, hey, I don't need to hear these stories. I'm not a rapist. It's like, no, that's a false dichotomy. Sexism between, you know, men and women, it's to varying degrees. You know, it's not saying that the people that need to hear these Me Too stories are men that raped and men that haven't raped or haven't assaulted a woman. This doesn't apply to them. You know, it's all these things. So I kind of wanted to talk about that. And I also wanted to talk about I lost my train of thought.
So let's go on that, what you said so far about marginalizing. When I made the thumbnail, I said how most Muslims marginalize ex-Muslims. You're like, no, we need to be fair. We're going to say how most Muslims marginalize ex-Muslim to varying degrees. So that's good. You're being specific that it's not all the same, but from at different levels, we have Muslims trying to marginalize their experiences and to deny even that we exist, right? Like that's the experience we have. The experience we have is Muslims don't even want to admit there's such a thing as ex-Muslim. Now that's changed a lot, and you've been ex-Muslim now for almost 15 years, much, mm-hmm. much longer than me. Like, I've been ex-Muslim since 2015. So what have you, is this what you see as well, that there's been a change now? There's a lot of things that actually people are talking about ex-Muslim, people are talking about apostasy. Imams are saying there's apostasy happening. There's this change in the water, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, there's some change in the sense that, you know, dissent is being a little bit normalized, you know, but there isn't change, you know, in the sense that, like I said, you know, people, Muslims still don't, when they hear ex-Muslim, they're like, no, I don't want to hear it. And they still play the victim card, you know, like, hey, you know, ex-Muslim, hey, stop it. Oh. Hey, you're making Muslims look bad. You know, it's like they're saying, you know, you're, by saying that you're ex-Muslim, you are bringing negative attention to Muslims and you're making us look bad and you're increasing the hatred. And it's such a very myopic view, and one that is clearly indicative of someone in a dominant oppressive role. Someone who is so wrapped up in their own stuff, in their own problems, in their own selfishness, that they don't even think that, hey, what up, like, okay, don't talk about being ex-Muslim. You know, okay, well, what about the intolerance? It's like, don't say that ex-Muslims face intolerance because you're gonna make Muslims look bad. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what about the intolerance? You know, just you know, like, can't you even acknowledge that? You know?
Yeah. Some people, one of a mutual friends posted, you know, I'm an ex-Muslim, ask me anything, when we had the Ask an Ex-Muslim campaign day, or Ask an Atheist day. And he had a friend of his, I think he said for 15 years or something, say to him, I find that label offensive, the ex-Muslim label.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. And what do you think?
Why don't you find it offensive that your prophet said that we deserve to die? You know, how is that not offensive?
Yeah.
And that's another thing we can talk about, is let's actually flip the script a little bit, right? Let's say there's this guy, you know, some, like, when you mentioned that, hey, like, in my home country, my home country is one of the countries where that ruling is in place and you can be executed. And if you mention that and say, hey, it's illegal to leave Islam, to be an ex-Muslim, and you can get executed for it. A lot of people say, no, don't. Nobody cares, man. Trust me, man. Nobody's gonna kill you, bro. Just keep it to yourself. Yeah, it's just this law that's on the books, man. Don't worry about it. Imagine if there was a place, just flip the script. Imagine if there was some country, right? Some country in Eastern Europe where, you know, they had beef with the Muslims back in the day, and there was a law that said, hey, it's illegal to be Muslim, right? Imagine if some Muslim voiced some concern and you were like, oh, it's illegal, but, like, just hide it. Just as long as you hide it, you're fine. Just don't advertise it. You'll be fine. Nobody cares, you know. And even if the penalty wasn't execution, even if the penalty was a citation, Muslims would rightfully, very rightfully, be offended. Not just be offended, but they would see how it's problematic. They would see how that actually breeds hatred. Now, on top of that, let's say people in this random fictitious Eastern European country actually do marginalize Muslims and hate Muslims and attack them for being Muslim. And then imagine if you're like, hey, look, maybe like this law isn't actually being implemented. Maybe nobody's being executed, but don't you think that just by the fact that people, you know, the founder of this country, you know, once said that, you know, people should, like, he doesn't like Muslims, or, you know, Muslims should be executed because that's treason against us. Don't you think that, like, that has at least contributes to the negative feelings of Muslims? Anywhere else, if you say, okay, if you say, you know, women, if some guy wrote in a history book, women deserve to die.
Yeah.
You know, and then people still follow that guy, And even if like somehow that rule wasn't in effect, like if he built a he built some empire, you know, and said women who don't sleep with their husbands whenever they want to should die or whatever. And then let's just say that somewhere along the history of that country, that rule was taken out, you know. Can you, and then these people were like, and then there was sexism in that country. And people said, well, hey, this sexism is related to what this guy said, even if the rule isn't applicable anymore. You know, it's like if you just change things up and put the ball back into their court, you know, I just want to see how Muslims would react to this. You know,
yeah, it's a great point. And there's actually a video by Dark Matter 2525 where he has a video of basically Trump. It looks like Trump, and it says, "What if Trump was Prophet Muhammad?" And he like quotes some of the things that like Trump is criticized for, and like the Muslim ban, you know, like the so-called Muslim ban, and the things that Prophet Muhammad said, they're like far worse than what Trump was saying. Mm-hmm. Yet people are like, it's okay.
Yeah, and here's their excuse. Here's their excuse. They'll just say, "Well, that was a long time ago, and like things were different then, so like." You know, since it was different, it's excusable. So here's what I would say in that position, right? All right, fine. Let's go into the future, 1,400 years, 1,000 years, right? And then there were just, let's say there's people that still maybe revere Trump or something like that. You know, like in 1,500 years, right? Like, would people say that, oh, you know, Trump wasn't sexist or racist or anti-Muslim back then? It was just, a long time ago. You can't really judge him by that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
although there is a point here to be made that if you're looking at him as a historical persona, then that is a point, a valid point. But Muslims don't look at him as just another warlord. They're looking at him as the epitome of perfection. The seal of the prophet, right? The best of all mankind. The one that, you know, whether he stood when he pissed or whether he sat, influences millions of Muslim men. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, his defecation habits affect, like, billions. Did I say millions? I should have said billions. Billions of people, right? Billions upon billions. So, yeah, of course, you know, we have every right to criticize this individual. And, you know, the interesting thing is when we're criticizing Muhammad, we're not actually criticizing, what I think is we're not criticizing him. We're criticizing the idea of him, meaning like the myth, because Muslims don't believe in a historical Muhammad. They believe in the myth of Muhammad that was preserved through the Hadith and the Quran. And so what we have about Muhammad is whatever, you know, the Muslim scholars wanted us to know about him. It's not necessarily true. It's just what you know, it's the image we have. It's a construction we have of Muhammad. So we're not even really criticizing Muhammad per se. We're criticizing the dogma, the belief, right? The you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And that is a good segue into this other thing that I was thinking about is how, whether it's with the Quran or with Muhammad, right? Muslims kind of, you know, they switch things up. You know, initially it's like, hey, the Quran is perfect. There's no mistake in it. There's no bad teaching. Islam is perfect. There's nothing bad in it. Find something bad. Nobody in 1400 years has been able to find anything bad or wrong, or the Prophet never did anything bad or wrong. He was perfect. And then when you actually find an imperfection, and then you hear this stuff, and then you meet this challenge, and you find an imperfection in the Quran. You find a bad verse. Then it's like, hey, look, man. Hey, every book has this bad stuff. You know, every person back then did these bad things. It's like, you know, you're switching your argument. Your first argument, which you're bragging and boasting about how your religion is perfect, your book is perfect, your prophet is perfect. You know, you're saying that, like, this is what sets Islam apart from the other religions, and this is what makes it the one true religion. It's the only religion that's perfect. It is a complete code to life, and it's the only religion with the perfect book, and it's the only religion with the messenger that was absolutely perfect, never did nothing wrong, only did good things. And then once you meet this challenge, this arrogant bragging and boasting, you know, once you actually respond to it, then things change. And it's like, no, it's, hey, man, it's just, you know, everything sucks. It's just like everything else. You know, everybody did bad stuff back then. Leave us alone, man. It's like Muslims are always going around bragging about how awesome the Quran is and how it doesn't have any perfection, any problems.
Imperfections,
you know. And then when you actually hold them accountable to that claim, then it's like, no, leave us alone, man. We're just leave us alone, man. Why do you got to criticize our religion, man?
Just look, leave,
man,
us alone.
You already got all these people, you know, every day this Trump guy is bashing us. There's so much negativity for us, man. We don't need this, man. Can you please just leave us alone? You know, it's like this is one of the things that I would like to, you know, these are one of the things that Muslims need to hear about ex-Muslims. So they can finally stop wondering, you know, why are these ex-Muslim people? Why can't they just keep it to themselves? And here's another thing. This whole thing about why don't ex-Muslims just keep it to themselves? You don't realize we do keep it to ourselves. We want to keep it to ourselves. It's only when we start living our lives the way we want to that you notice that we're no longer practicing Islam. And then you ask us, why aren't you? What happened?
Yeah.
You know? And then we have to either lie and just say that we're bad Muslims and we're not practicing anymore, or we have to tell you that we're not Muslims anymore.
Yeah.
You know? And that's how it happens. And mm-hmm. and they don't realize that. Like even these, somebody put a tweet about Muhammad Hijab. Somebody wrote some stuff like, you know, why can't they just leave quietly? Why do they have to make it an identity? Why do they have to talk about it? It's like, no, it's you guys. You are the ones that are talking about it. And this whole, like, people say that, ex-Muslims of North America or whatever is a hate group. It started off as a hate group. No, it's not. The ex-Muslim movement is a response to what Muslims are doing and how Muslims are treating. Just like feminism is a response to what men are doing. It's not a movement geared, motivated by hatred for men. Just like the Black Panthers. Everybody was thinking, okay, the Black Panthers or this radical anti-white group. You know, that this is how they started. It's like, no, that's not how they started. They are a response to what white people are doing to Black people, you know. And here's the final nail in the coffin, mm-hmm. you know, because they'll say, well, no, ex-Muslims are not marginalized. They are just hateful bigots. And that's why these groups exist, you know. So that's why it's important to prove that Muslims do marginalize ex-Muslims. So that it legitimizes ex-Muslim groups. But yeah. Here's the deal. Here is a nail in the coffin. Here is what proves it all. And the best thing is that it is verifiable and demonstrable and testable. So anyone that denies it but refuses to test it is pretty much telling you, like, I'm full of BS, you know? So here's the thing, right? So if you were to go to any Muslim leader or any Muslim influencer, right, and say, hey, check it out, man. Look, you know, there's a lot of intolerance going on with people who leave Islam, especially from their families. They get disowned. Excuse me. People stop talking to them. People don't like them anymore. People cut off their relationships with them. You know, can you just put out a message? Can you take 30 seconds out of your next Friday sermon? Can you take maybe two or three lines from your next blog? Can you take a few seconds out of your next podcast and simply say, hey, remind you guys, we've had some reports of people, you know, who have left Islam and they're facing a lot of intolerance. And I just wanted to remind you guys that, you know, as long as they're not advertising it, they're keeping it to themselves. If you happen to find out that your friend or your relative is no longer Muslim, don't change anything about it. Don't treat them differently. Treat them the same way. Right? This is simple, right? No Muslim will ever do this. No, well, and I can't say no. Some would, yeah. But the overwhelming majority of Muslims will not do this. I have tested this. I have tested this multiple locations, multiple types of Muslims. The most far leftist Muslim you can think of, right? The Muslim leader, right? A female, okay? Her blog says, everyone at our center is welcome. Men, mm-hmm. women, LGBT, we don't turn anybody away, you know? I asked them and they're just like, nah, man, get away. We don't want nothing to do with that stuff. So it's like that right there, the simple refusal to even do that. When on top of that, right, like a lot of these Muslims will be like, if you made the same request towards Shias, you know, they'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, Shias are a minority, we're the majority, you know, and you know, and even though, like, I've never seen any anti-Shia sentiment, or I've never displayed it myself, and it doesn't really occur much in my congregation, I should still send a message out, because it is our responsibility as a dominant group towards mm-hmm. a minority group.
Yeah,
you know, but if you say that about exos, they won't do it. So really, like, that's the nail in the coffin. That's really all you need. And if anybody says that, no, you know, most people would, and that, you know, all these people that you asked, that you approached, well, you kind of had, they could sense that you had this angry ex-Muslim malicious intent. So if somebody says that, you can be like, okay, look, why don't you try it? Why don't you give them a call?
Yeah.
Go contact every single mosque you can think of and say it in the nicest way. Don't even say that you're an ex-Muslim. Just say, hey, you know, I'm just kind of trying to test this theory. You know, these ex-Muslims are saying that, you know, if you were presented with this request, you wouldn't do it. So, and, you know, could you just do this request? Would you be able to oblige this request? You know, like, you can challenge people. Anyone that says that, no, this theory of yours that Muslim leaders won't oblige to this request is, like, not true. Then just tell them, look, go test it. Do it yourself.
I have evidence that what you're saying is true. I have an example. Mm-hmm. This happened a while ago. Yasir Qadhi made this post. You know, Yasir Qadhi is actually in many, many ways quite a reasonable person. Mm-hmm. But he was triggered most likely by me, because I made a video, Yasir Qadhi has doubts. This is before the whole Quran leaks thing became a big explosion. This was way back in 2018. And he was like, he's just like right up bashing ex-Muslims. He uses the word murtad. I mean, if you're speaking in English, why do you suddenly switch to murtad? You can just say apostate, right? But it has this negative taste in your mouth when you say murtad, you know? It's like mm-hmm. you dog, you donkey,
yeah,
you
yeah.
murtad, you know? You kafir, yeah, kafir, get out of my house, yeah, kafir. Anyways, let me just
pause you real quick before you go further. When you're done with this, I want to talk about murtad and how it's supposedly not a slur.
Okay, yeah. So he... Deaf, dumb, and blind, these murtads will not return. So he's like, you know, like straight up attack here. And, you know, it's his right if he wants to talk like that. The thing is, it's never a tone of like, it's very rarely a tone of, you know, respect or mutual acceptance or anything like that. It's, you know, and I bet you if you go through the history of Yasir Qadhi's page or anybody else's, they don't even talk about ex-Muslims in general. I feel like they're at the point now where sometimes they're being forced to talk about it. In this case, someone sent him my video. Someone that doesn't like me sent him my video saying, look, Abdullah Samir made a video about you. And then this is when this angry post came out the next day. So I agree with you, and I think that this is pretty much the case that because of the ideology of Islam and what you said about, like, even if it's not implemented, the fact that the belief is there that if someone leaves Islam, they deserve to be killed, even if they're not killed, even if you don't have the right conditions, that just, what does that make you feel about someone that leaves Islam? Like, what kind of person is this? This person's a piece of, like, filth, basically, right? And you can see that in the hostile language from Yasir Qadhi in this post, which was really disappointing to me. Not only did he do that, he also deleted a bunch of responses that I wrote a response, Jimmy wrote a response, Imtiaz, Abdullah Gondil, and a bunch of other people wrote responses. He deleted them one by one, right? And this is when he blocked me from his page. But it comes from the ideology. The ideology teaches you these things. It doesn't, again, to be clear, Islam doesn't say that you can kill an ex-Muslim in a non-Muslim country. Vigilante violence, as far as I believe, is not a part of Islam. But the idea...
Go ahead.
But the idea is still there that we deserve to die. So go ahead. Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, it's always so funny. A lot of times when they'll say, you know, like that guy, Adnan or whatever, he's one of Ali Dawah's homeboys. I think his name is Adnan or whatever.
Anan Rashid?
Yeah. He was like talking about the apostasy. He's like, no, this doesn't mean you can just go around killing people. It's got to be like, you know, you got to have a trial and you get a chance to renounce it. Like, dude, like.
Oh, yeah. So basically they say, oh, no, we don't kill him. We give him 3 days to repent or something like that. Right?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, it's so kind of crazy.
And about the, before I get into my next, I want to give you an example of the various Muslims that I have presented this to. You know, I'll just quickly kind of read off the stuff. But about Murtad, that's an interesting thing, because Muslims will say like, oh, it's not a slur. But they're not qualified to say it's not a slur. You know, the people that it's being said to and who feel the effects of it, who feel the impacts of it, are qualified to say, yes, this is a slur. And someone from the dominant group is not qualified to say it's not a slur, you know? And it's just so funny because, like, again, these so-called progressive and so-called leftist Muslims, they understand this when it's in the context of a different minority. But when it's fingers pointed back to them, it's like, whoa, wait a minute here. Wait, you know?
Yeah.
So let me give you this example. So here, this person here, I'm not going to tell his name, but he is, I believe he's a convert. He is, a Black American, and he's Muslim, and he is kind of like within my, I used to be in a smaller town, fairly progressive town, and within the Facebook groups of that town, he is kind of like the sort of quintessential BLM kind of guy. So he's revered in that sense, thankfully. So I just sent him a message. I said, hey, how's it going? Hope you're doing well, blah, blah, blah. I just had a question for you. Do you think any Muslim leader should oblige if they were asked to take 30 seconds out of their next Friday sermon or vlog or podcast to say the following? Many, and this is in quotes, many foreign Muslims are facing intolerance when their families and friends find out they're no longer Muslim, if they're keeping their departure from Islam to themselves, but you somehow find out, please don't cut ties with them or disown them or kick them out or stop being friends with them or try to separate them from a mutual child that you may have. And if you see a Muslim friend or family member who stops practicing Islam in some manner, such as shaves their beard, stops praying, removes hijab, stops attending mosques, quits leading prayer, etc., please don't bring it up or counsel them or express curiosity, because they may be doing so because they're no longer Muslim, and we obviously prefer it if former Muslims kept their departure from Islam to themselves. And then I said, number one, do you think, and this is me asking him, number one, do you think any Muslim leader or influencer should oblige to this request? Or do you think any Muslim would oblige? And then number two, do you think they should? And I'm asking them this because obviously he rightfully believes that, you know, white people and non-Muslims should oblige to this request if it was made by people of color or Muslims. So he responds, he says, "Assalamu alaikum, you'd need to speak with them directly." And then I said, thank you, but that wasn't what I'm asking. I said, I assume that you do think that non-Muslims or white people should be obliged to make such a request and take a few moments out of their sermon or whatever. And I'm assuming this applies to most minority groups that are marginalized to varying degrees. And of course, ex-Muslims are no different. Could you help me make this request to any Muslim leader that you may have association with? And he says, ask someone else. So it's just hilarious. And like, I have just, this is across the board, is this type of response, whether they are, you know, BLM related, you know, leftist or progressive, whether they are more traditional, whether they're Salafi, whether they're practicing, whether they're non-practicing, the overwhelming majority of Muslims will have this response. And like I said before, it is the nail in the coffin. So if anyone ever tries to discount or argue with the legitimacy of the existence of ex-Muslim groups and our need to form these support groups, throw that out at them And then when they deny that, this theory is incorrect, that
yeah, but you know what they'll say? They'll say that you guys are spreading facade and fitna in the land. You guys are spreading corruption. You guys are misguiding gullible people to leave Islam. I mean, what you said was very generous, because you said, they're not even being public about it, but, you find out and, be nice to them, basically. Be nice to your sister who you found out, is wearing hijab.
Don't change your relationship with them. Don't treat them differently.
Exactly. And that's very reasonable. I mean, that doesn't even count like people like me. And people like me are the minority. And what I mean by that is the majority of ex-Muslims are not activists. We don't talk about Islam.
Exactly.
I do, sure. But I mean, the majority are like you, in living your life. And so this is a totally different scenario. And in this scenario, what you're saying makes perfect sense. But what do you think about them saying, you guys are... I mean, that's kind of a different scenario where they're actually going out and preaching. But let's say they don't preach it, but they're still like, if you ask them, they'll tell you, yeah, Islam is bad. Prophet Muhammad was a bad person, and so on and so forth. Like, that's their justification. Whereas for BLM, they're like, well, yeah, black people, and they don't deserve this bad treatment. But ex-Muslims are different, because ex-Muslims are bad, bad people, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because number one, they assume they don't realize that the overwhelming majority of ex-Muslims are people who are in the closet, still live with their family, still want everything to be the same, don't really want to tell anybody that they left Islam, don't really want to debunk Islam. But when they hear ex-Muslim, they think of people like you, people who are blogging, who are debunking Islam. And even that, you can still give them a response to that and be like, look, the majority of ex-Muslims that actually do debunk Islam or make Muslims look bad, according to you, are doing so as a response to Muslims themselves. To whenever someone leaves Islam, and they tell people that, the Muslims say, no. Oh, tell me. Give me one good reason why you left Islam. Islam is perfect, and these ex-Muslims that you people that left Islam are misguided, and you're completely wrong in your research and all this stuff, and there's nothing wrong with it. So again, it's these ex-Muslims that do make Islam look bad, according to them, even that is a product of Muslim behavior. So at the end, it's pretty much most of their fault. It's like they don't even realize that they are causing much of the problem. Like, even if you were to just tell a Muslim, like, hey, check it out, do me a favor, tell your congregation or tell your subscribers or tell everybody, again, if you find out that someone has left Islam or whatever, stop talking about like, hey, go speak to a scholar, you're wrong, a scholar can figure it out. Because you were to go to a scholar, if you were to go up to a scholar and say, hey man, I'm an ex-Muslim, and I have all these things I want to present you with, because all these Muslims are like, hey, go talk to a scholar, they'll say, oh, I don't have time for it. But and no Muslim scholar will have time. But what they do have time for, they have all the time in the world, is to make all these videos about, oh my God, people are leaving Islam. What are we going to do about it? We're losing Islam to atheism. We're losing Muslims to atheism. It's like, you have time to do all that, but you can't take 30 seconds out. What does that say about you? What does that say about your beliefs? What does that say about the Ummah?
Yeah, I want to say quite a few things to say about that. There's nothing wrong with them telling people to talk to scholars, but what is wrong is them discriminating people for being Muslim, being ex-Muslim. And like you said, they have a responsibility. So for me, I want to put this in action, and I am going to put this in action, and I am putting this in action. How am I putting this in action? I talk about Islam all the time. At the same time, I make sure that whenever I talk about Islam, I make it clear that we still respect people as human beings, whether you're Hindu, Muslim, atheist, Buddhist, or whatever religion, or whatever color, or whatever sexuality, whatever race, even if you're an alien. Unless you want to kill us, of course, and then you're a bad alien, and then we'll kill you first if any aliens are watching this. But overall, we would respect people and give them the rights, the basic rights, and they should not be discriminated. And that's what the United Nations Human Rights Charter is all about, right? And that's what counts at the end of the day. Treat people with dignity and don't discriminate them, right? Don't be a bigot, basically. So how am I implementing that? I make sure that whenever I'm doing these talks, because my words could be used, right, by the wrong crowd, the far right, who wants to weaponize ex-Muslims. I'm not going to let them weaponize me. I'm going to keep saying that, hey, okay, just because there are these terrorists that did these bad things, and it can't, and I do believe it was inspired by Islam. Heck, even ask the terrorists, they'll tell you that themselves. You don't need to ask me. That doesn't mean that you should be scared of your neighbor next door. Like, it doesn't mean he's going to like chop off your head or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, living in America. So it's not like, and the people that are scared of getting their heads chopped off, a lot of them are Muslims. Living in Syria right now, they're scared of the you know, ISIS or whatever. They're Muslim too, or Boko Haram, they're kidnapping Kenyan girls and whatever. So we ex-Muslims, at least most of us, we do take that responsibility seriously, and we make sure, like, you know, Reason on Faith, a good friend, Sohail Ahmed, he goes way out of his way to make sure that it's, you know, we're attacking ideas, not people, right? We're not demonizing people. And people can be criticized too. If Muslims are doing something bad, I mean, I will say that Muslims are doing these things bad, but I'm not, you know, advocating for yet from the Muslim side. We see a silence, and we don't see them talking about Ahmadi rights. We don't see them talking about Shia rights. We don't see them talking about ex-Muslims, like you said. What they do talk about is Islamophobia. You guys are causing Islamophobia to go on. I've had people tell me this. I had a Muslim, it's kind of a weird Muslim anyways, he's a Muslim at Columbia University. I don't even know if he's Muslim, but he calls himself Muslim, and he says he believes in Jesus and he believes in Allah, and he's some weird academic guy. And he's like, you're causing Islamophobia by the things you're saying. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm freaking fighting Islamophobia by saying respect Muslims as human beings. Just because the ideology is shit doesn't mean you can't respect them as human beings. So I'm against Islamophobia. Yeah. I'm fighting Islamophobia. Islamophobia is a bad word. I don't like that word because it conflates criticism of Islam with anti-Muslim bigotry. But I'm fighting anti-Muslim bigotry. I'm, you know, so from that perspective, I think I'm helping Muslims. Now, of course, I don't think that anyone's really, maybe some Muslims are grateful for that. And a lot of them, they just don't like me anyways, because of overall the net, what they see from me is I'm attacking Islam. They don't really care about that part of my activism, even though to me, both are equally important. Both, you know, talking about people's rights and also talking about Islam as an ideology. They're both important to me. But you're right. This is a good point, that we are marginalized by Muslims, and even more so in Muslim countries. Muslim countries, damn, you're like, you can't even talk about leaving Islam. Like, Muslim countries, or even non-Muslim countries, like in America, if you're a Muslim woman and you leave Islam, you're screwed. I mean, you could be if you're a young Muslim woman. If you're an adult, you might be better off. But if you're a young Muslim woman, whew, good luck. You're going to have to continue wearing the hijab. You're going to have to continue pretending to be Muslim. You're going to have to, you might even end up, you know, there's one young lady who I'm going to interview at some point, who ran away from home. She's a Pashto, I think. And she was about...
You're talking about.
Yeah. And she was about to get into an arranged marriage. Mm-hmm. And I told her, like, you need to stop this now before things get more messy. Mm-hmm. The next thing, you're going to have kids and you're going to be double screwed. So if you're not Muslim, you got it. You have to stop the marriage because you're going to get married to a Muslim man. And anyway, so she ran away from home after that. And of course, this life has been tough for her. In America, I guess she's in America. And
yeah. If it's the one I'm thinking of, it's, yeah, I helped her out with a ride.
Little Devil, right?
Probably somebody else.
Okay. So so many. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, there's so many. Yeah. And regarding that whole, like, you know, I didn't, you know, I had a YouTube channel a while back, you know, talking about, you know, ways to debunk Islam. You know, I remember some people were, you know, people would just say, like, you know, oh, you should have a disclaimer. You should, like, you know, say that, like, you know, whenever you say that the Quran teaches this, you should first say that, you know, I don't mean that Muslims will do this. I'm just talking about what's in the Quran. I'm not talking about the behavior of Muslims. Or put a disclaimer, you know, like you said, that says, hey, this isn't about hating Muslims. But the thing is, even if you put that, they'll still say the same thing. They'll still say that this makes Muslims look bad. So it's like the thing is, they just want you to be quiet. They want you to they want to shut you down. They want you to stop talking about Islam. And it's like, why can't you focus on the root cause of this, of Muslims? Get Muslims to stop bragging about how Islam is perfect. get Muslims to stop messing with ex-Muslims and asking them why they left Islam. And that will solve the majority of this anti-Muslim attention that you are so opposed to. If you're that opposed to it, why can't you take a few seconds and look towards yourself? You know, if these leaders, these Muslim leaders, are so opposed to anti-Muslim bigotry and really think that it's such a problem, that it's so problematic. If it's that problematic, and I tell you that, hey, this thing that takes 30 seconds of your time, will probably get rid of like a significant amount of it. They won't do it. That right there is tells you everything you need to know about Islam.
Mm-hmm. Why would it get rid of anti-Muslim bigotry? Because anti-Muslim bigotry comes from people that are basically hate.
Well, Muslims. I would say what they want to. It would get rid of, or it would decrease the negative criticism of Islam.
Well, it would decrease the negative criticism of Islam from people like me, but it would still not stop far right individuals who want Muslims don't want Muslims in the country. They want to ban immigration. You know, Robert Spencer types who say things like an Al Qaeda Muslim member is the same as an American Muslim that's living next to you. He says things like that. He says that there's no difference between that guy that's blowing up stuff and the guy living next door to you, whose kids go to the same school as you. Mm-hmm. Like,
oh yeah, yeah, of course.
Not gonna stop people like that. Like people like
of
that.
No. Of course, there's people like that. What I'm saying is that I guess they're saying that, you know, this debunking of Islam, this just any they're saying that criticism of Islam, or criticism of the Quran, criticism of Muhammad, which is what ex-Muslims are doing, they're saying that stuff right there accounts for whatever a certain amount of the anti-Muslim bigotry that happens, you know. And if whatever it is, they believe that it's a significant amount, and they can do something that will start to put an end to that, you know. All you got to do is take a few seconds, take 30 seconds, send out this message. If enough Muslims do this, ex-Muslims will stop, you know, will probably, fewer ex-Muslims will be debunking Islam as much.
I don't think should care what we do. They should just do it because that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. They shouldn't do any of this to reduce Islamophobia. They should do it because, apostate prophet in the house. Dropping 10 bones up in this mother his. All right. Anyway.
Thank you.
A peasy in the heezy. Shit, man. Where was I? Fucking apostate prophet just threw me off.
He always does that. I was like, even on the stream with David Wood, he'd be like, it's out of the blue. Talk about something different.
Yeah. So, let's see here.
Naughty. Is it the one?
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, here's the other thing, right?
Yeah.
So with me, I'll tell you a little bit about how things were with me. I was sort of semi-practicing, but I believed, you know, I fully believed. And now here's the other funny part, right? So I'm having drinks with my friend. He's Muslim. And then my other friend, he's like kind of halfway, you know, we're having drinks at a bar, by the way, right? We have the same background, you know, clubbing, you know, going out, drinking. Smoking weed, stuff like that, you know. But me, on the other hand, like I actually prayed. Like I knew how to pray, you know. When Ramadan came, I would not just fast, but I would pray, and I knew how to pray, you know. And like, you know, like even though, you know, I had my phases where I would, you know, listen to lots of lectures, Islamic lectures and stuff like that. But you know, there I did have that overall look of someone that kind of doesn't practice. So, what sparked it? You know, I don't talk about Islam with my friends, you know, or Muslim friends or family members. But anyway, I mentioned something, right? And he was like, bro, you were never Muslim to begin with. And I didn't ask him because I knew that he would just get stuck, you know, and then he would probably just like throw a drink away and walk off in anger. But here's what I would have said to him. you know, if I said, why do you say that, right? What makes you say that I wasn't Muslim then? He would say, well, oh, well, because, you know, you drank alcohol, you went clubbing, you know, and like you didn't pray, like you never went to the mosque, you know, you never opened up a Quran. And I could have just been like, okay, you were like that, you still are like that. Are you Muslim now? You're Muslim, right? Yeah.
The pot calling the kettle black, yeah, right?
Yeah. Like, so if someone were to tell you that you're not Muslim because of this, you would say, it doesn't matter what you practice, brother. It's about what you believe in your heart. I could snort a line of coke off this hooker's ass, you know, and like eat pork during Ramadan. But if I believe in Allah, if I believe that his final messenger was a Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that makes me Muslim. You know, but if like
that does make you Muslim, and it's only the extremists, the Khawarij, that took people out of Islam based on the deeds. Right? I mean, your lack of practicing Islam doesn't make you a disbeliever. According to the majority of Muslims scholars, you're still Muslim even if you don't pray and fast, as long as you believe in it, right? Of course, yeah, which is, your belief is deficient, of course, because you're not actually implementing all of it.
It's just so funny how their standards, their definitions for everything just crumble, you know. And it just shows you how like almost every position that Muslims have in terms of defending Islam or defaming ex-Muslims, it's based on just weak contradictions like this. You know, like there's so many, like just almost every defense of Islam's trueness, of its perfection, of its lack of being problematic, every defense, or not every, but a lot of it is just, there's so many logical fallacies involved. Straw man arguments, moving the goalposts. Yeah. I mean, we got to do another show just on the logical fallacies.
You know, what's funny is you were told you were not a true Muslim, not a Muslim. I was told that too. And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? I was not a Muslim. You were never a Muslim, I was told. I'm like, how are you saying that? Oh, because you left Islam. I was like, what? Like,
yeah, that's
a non sequitur. Like, what's the connection? I didn't use that word back then. I didn't know that word. But like, what's the connection? He's like, well, a true Muslim would have understood Islam and never would have left Islam. So according to them, true Muslims can never leave Islam. And Ali Dawah uses this as well, where he says, oh, you guys are all fake ex-Muslims. What is a fake ex-Muslim? I mean, you have actually people at the time of the Prophet Muhammad who actually left Islam. And some of them were like big names, right? Like, the scribe Abdullah ibn what's his name, anyways, it's not coming to my mind right now, but there's someone's going to put in the comments, one of the guys that used to write the Abdullah ibn Abi Sar, the scribe of Muhammad. And this is an academic paper. Yasin Dutton in his academic paper quoted this story that this guy left Islam because as he was writing the revelation, he would like make a suggestion. Muhammad would be like, yeah, just write that. Like, you know, he would say, like, you know, As-Sami'ul Alim, and he would write Ar-Rahmur Rahimin or something, a different name of Allah, Al-Malik Al-Qudus or whatever. And he would, and Muhammad is like, yeah, it's both the same or whatever, something like that. And this guy's like, what? And then he left Islam. And of course, he was supposed to be killed because of that. So anyways, even this guy apparently is probably not a true Muslim because he left Islam, even though he was a scribe of Muhammad writing down the Quran. Anyways, yeah, you can't talk logic with people like that. You know, this guy was talking emotion with you. And apparently, yeah, that's hilarious though. That story is just, it's just gold. Both of you guys are in the bar, you know, having drink, yeah. And he's like, you're not the true Muslim.
Yeah, and this is like, it's like, bro, here's this is like the funniest part, right? Sometimes people will be like, and you know, the Muslims always assume that like my position on something is like, oh, well, all he knows is like the extremist Muslims. And this guy has never like really listened to like these scholars that I know about, you know?
Hamza Yusuf, right?
Yeah, like Hamza Yusuf. Yeah. Yeah, and this is the funniest shit ever, because like people like these, I'm older, I'm in my 40s, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, people, just these younger people would be like, Dude, you should really like, there's this guy named Hamza Yusuf. You should check him out. You know, it's, you need to really see this different perspective. Just listen to like one of his videos. And the funniest thing was like when Hamza Yusuf was up and coming, when he was first kind of coming out, this was like 1998 or something like that. Yeah. You know, I actually saw him speak. It was some sort of charity fundraiser. Then that was my first time seeing, or the second time seeing a white convert. And just being in awe over this guy who can speak Arabic perfectly. And it's like, and yeah. On top of that, like I've actually been to his little campus, you know, taking classes, taking lectures, not classes, but I went there for a lecture. Zaytuna. I went there to their community events here and there a little bit. So it's just so funny how like, they're just like, yeah, this guy, like, dude, You gotta check out this Hamza Yusuf guy, and I'm like, bro, I've been bumping this guy's shit for like years, or this other guy. Like when I was a teenager, this was before YouTube. Okay, God, these people don't know how lucky they have it. Back then, if we wanted to listen to Islamic lectures, we had to find some guy that had a VHS cassette,
bro. You know?
And then why do you think I made light upon light?
That's why I made light upon light, because of this problem when I became Sunni Muslim. I'm like, there's no resources. You got to go to like freaking taking a bus for 1 hour to some store in the middle of, you know, Toronto or somewhere. And you're like, they have these VHS tapes, which are like 40 years old. And that's why I created lightuponlight.com. It's for for the exact reason you just mentioned.
Yeah. I remember when I was around like 15 or something like that, you know, my older cousin, who was like my older brother, he was starting to get into Islam. And I was kind of into it a little bit already because of like the hip hop music. There's a lot of connection with hip hop and Islam back then, you know. So he knew this older guy. His name was Brother Jamil. He was a black convert, and you know, every Tuesdays we would go to his house and just chit chat about Islam. It was mainly him talking, you know, or sometimes we'd watch videos, and he let us borrow an Ahmed Didat video, you know, a debate between him and this Christian evangelist named Jimmy Swagger, you know. So it's like Ahmed Didat was one of my like guys. That was like one of my like dudes, you know, that was one of my homies. Yeah. And, you know, I remember when I made a Facebook, an ex-Muslim page on Facebook. I remember some Muslim guy is like, dude, you guys are so misinformed. You should like check out this guy named Ahmed Didat.
Oh my God.
I'm like, bro.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just like, bro, like, where are you coming from? It's like, it just.
I was watching Ahmed Didat when you were in diapers, boy.
Yeah, seriously, yeah.
You know, these Ahmed Didat guys and these Yusuf Estes and these popular speakers, Zakir Naik too, they sound very impressive, you know, and until you look into the details. Like, I remember Ahmed Didat. I'll just give you one example. Even as a Muslim, where I found him making mistakes. Well, one thing is just ridiculous. He would say things like, if you find me anywhere in the Bible that Jesus says he's God, or, you know, anyone, it says that Jesus is God, I'll give you $100. It's like all over the Bible. It's all over the freaking Bible that, like, look at John 3:16. In the beginning, there was God, and God was, you know, with whatever. I don't even know the quote, but it's there. But like, they make these grandiose claims on stage, and everyone's like clapping and laughing, and nobody cares. Nobody's listening. They just want to see their guy win, you know, and that's why everybody loves him. But I remember as a Muslim, one thing, one little story, Ahmed Didat made this statement that number 19, he basically mentioned the number 19 miracle in the Quran. And he quoted this verse in the Quran that says, over it a 19. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. I looked up the verse. The verse is talking about angels over hell. Like, it's clear from the context. It's not talking about a miracle of mathematics in the Quran. Yet, like, he's using it in a way that makes sense. And you find these people today, even these, like, Sheikh Imran Hussein, they're making these, like, claims that then they're, like, totally twisting and, you know, perverting the text away from what it actually says. Like, a straightforward reading, you can see that this is talking about something totally different. But, you know, they're trying to project their own sort of stuff onto it, and they sound cool and they sound dramatic. Yusuf Estes, there's some hilarious debunking videos, like one of them with David Wood, where he shows like Yusuf Estes like just pulling things out of his hat, like out of his ass, saying things like, you know, the Catholic invented this and that. Like, I don't know. It's just like they just make up stuff. Some of these sheikhs, I mean, Hamza Yusuf's not that bad. He's more intellectual and academic and all that. But like even Hamza Yusuf, I had this one Muslim lady on Facebook, you know, share this video with me, and it was just audio actually, 25 reasons why we believe in Allah. And honestly, when you actually become like a skeptic, like a rationalist, you see right through these things. They're not even convincing. It's like, yeah, okay, there's, you know, the world is beautiful or whatever like that. That doesn't mean Allah is true. Like, not like these are not good arguments. I don't remember all of the points he made, but like, you know, each one of these claims, they fall apart when you look into it in great detail, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now here's the other, just two kind of points that I wanted to, here's the other nail in the coffin.
Can I just lead? Okay. Actually, go ahead. I'll lead this off.
Okay. Yeah.
No, you go first because it's not done yet. Go ahead.
Okay, good. So basically, like, I just found this out in the Quran. It actually says, you know, if your fathers or your brothers disbelieve, you know, cut off ties or whatever, you know. And so it's just like, even the Quran itself tells you to cut ties with ex-Muslims, to mistreat them, you know. And here's the funny part, right? This will show you how just head in the ass Muslims are, heads up their asses, you know. It's like, that's like, what else do you need, right? If there was a verse in some sort of new, you know, Christianity sect that said, like, you know, don't be friends with Jews, you know, and you could say, okay, that's anti-Semitic, and then any anti-Semitism you see in this community is coming from this, you know.
Do you have a reference for that quote? I'm not sure which quote that is. What does it say?
I forgot. Oh,
what was the meaning of it?
Basically, yeah, it says that, God, I wish I knew the verse, but,
because I was always taught as a Muslim that, you know, you don't cut off ties with your family members, even if they're non-Muslim. And I even taught my wife the same thing, because my wife has non-Muslim family members. I have Muslim family members, but she didn't. And I always used to tell her that, you know, we maintain a good relationship with them. We just
The verse actually was referring to, you know, if your father stops believing, if your brother stops believing.
Yeah. So there is this. Okay. So that's something that, you know, varies from like scholar to scholar in terms of how strongly they do it. Salafis, of course, you know, they use this thing called wala and bara, and they just like, yeah, we're going to cut you guys off. You guys are kafir. We don't want nothing to do with you. We're no friends with non-Muslims. You know, you guys are like enemies of Allah, whatever. There's that. And then there's the Sufi way, and there's the, you know, many in between. So it all depends on how, I guess, you.
Well, really, it doesn't really matter, because even if it says just treat them differently, you know, even if whether it's completely cut them off, whether it's kill them, whether it's like, just keep your distance from them because like they're causing corruption, even at that smallest point, you know, that already is basically bigotry, you know.
Yeah.
And that would, like, it's like, you know, they always say, oh no, well, Islam doesn't is against, you know, you mistreating ex-Muslims. Islam is all about, you know, accepting everybody, and, you know, all the stuff that you're saying that Muslims do, but to ex-Muslims, that has nothing to do with actual Islam. Those are just bad Muslims, you know. But like, here's a verse in the Quran that pretty much promotes that. So what do they do? How would they do that? They'll be like, oh, well, you know what? The thing is, like, that verse, you got to know the context of it. See, this verse came down, and they were only talking about these specific people, you know, and they always try to pull that, like, oh, no, this verse was for the specific time for these specific people. But it's like, okay, well, how about no compulsion religion? Can we say that, oh, no, you know, that was only meant for these people.
That was abrogated.
You know, or anything good. Well, yeah. You know, just even like the whole, like, you know, heaven is at the feet of your mother. Like, no, he was talking to that specific guy. He was telling that specific guy.
James just quoted this one. Is this the one?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just gonna read it. You will not find people who believe in Allah and Allah, you're having affection for those who are pays. Yeah, that's pretty harsh. Having affection for those who oppose Allah and His Messenger. Yeah, that's pretty brutal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that flat out says, like, if people don't believe in it, you know, fuck them. You know, yeah, so it's just like, what more do you need? You know, like, I guarantee you, present this to any scholar, and most of them haven't heard of it. They'll look up and they're like, yeah, this was about this one guy, you know, his dad and his son kind of like left Islam or wouldn't accept Islam.
in this case, it's pretty clear that it's a general. It's not like talking about one specific. It's a sort of universal statement, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they'll still, like, whenever there's something bad, they will say that, like, oh, this was just, you know, the context. This was created because it was about this thing. It's like, yeah, it was this situation, this scenario created this verse, but the verse is applicable now and forever. Yeah. You know, it's like it's general.
There is the other verses in the Quran that are specific.
Yes.
And there are those which are general.
Yeah, and it's the fact that there are cases like this where this is a legitimate argument. They use that blanketly. They use it as a white card to get out of every criticism, and that's the problem with Islam. Is some of these apologetic mistakes, these apologistic arguments they make, some of them are actually valid, you know.
Yeah.
And the problem is that's how I was with a Muslim. I'm like, oh well, you know. Well, in this case, this word, you know, like actually has a different meaning, you know. So this guy that's making this accusation, yeah, that word probably doesn't mean kill. It probably means like, you know, pet, you know, or tap lightly or something like that.
I beat them. Before we continue, I just want to read James. James, thank you so much for the very kind, generous donation. I was just in an atheist Discord server with a content creator involved in Atheism Plus called Creationist Cat, okay, and he was saying that lots of ex-Muslims like Amin Nawabi ended up far right. How much does a Christian background atheist community reject ex-Muslims for being too harsh to Islam? Yeah, that's bizarre. Amin is far right. I mean, that's hilarious because he's gone out of his way to say like what I just said about Muslims and, you know, treat Muslims with decency and they have every right, and he's, oh my God. But that's interesting that people have that image of him. I mean, I can kind of understand where they're coming from with the burning the Quran and all that. But that doesn't make you far right just because you're burning the Quran, just like some far right people burn the Quran. I think what makes you far right is how you, I mean, if you're basically, you know, anti-Muslim, and he's not anti-Muslim. But that's interesting. How do you have anything to say about that, Jamal? How much does a Christian basically ex-Christian community ex-Muslims for being too harsh to Islam?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's there. It's you know, it's a mixed bag, you know, but it's definitely there, you know. And their thing is like, oh well, but all, you know, hashtag not all, hashtag but everyone else does it, you know. It's a lot like this all lives matter response, you know. It's like black people are saying like, hey, you know, we're getting killed by cops, you know. People say, oh, but everybody gets killed by cops, not just you guys. And it's like, you know, it's like the point they're making is like, yeah, but we're getting killed for specific reasons, you know. And the same with ex-Muslims, you know, we're saying that, you know, we're saying that, like, hey, you know, this is what Islam does to ex-Muslims, and these ex-Christian atheists will say, oh well, I mean, every religion does that, all religions are like that to their apostates. And we'll say, okay, right, but however, you and everyone else keep saying that no, Islam doesn't do that. Islam is a one religion that is all about peace and is all about tolerance. So if you stop trying to make Islam look special, if you're the one that's saying Islam is a one religion that's all about peace and acceptance and tolerance, then maybe we will stop trying to point out how there's errors in Islam and how Islam does teach tolerance.
Yeah.
So we're not saying that, we're not asking you to just, you know, we're not asking you to single out Muslims over other people. We're saying, why don't you include Muslims as people that do marginalize? Why don't you include Muslims as ex? Why don't you include ex-Muslims as the people that get marginalized by their minority group?
I don't think, honestly, it's a fair ask for them to tell us to stop criticizing Islam or anything else. I mean, we're gonna criticize whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. It just live, like, accept it. Like, the Quran attacks non-Muslims. I'm not for banning the Quran. I'm like, go ahead. Yeah. I'm gonna beat you by having better values, by having better ideas. And I actually thought when I first started this whole thing that we had no chance against the Muslim channels, the Muslim Dawah channels. And I was so wrong. I didn't realize that, you know, even the small guys, you know, when you speak good things, you have that chance to get to where you need to get to. And there's a need for this sort of content. There's people want to hear these things. So I was impressed that even without all of the funding and all of the Dawah machinery, like Aila gets millions of dollars in donations. Yaqeen Institute gets millions of dollars of donations. Al Maghrib Institute, millions of dollars of donations. And, you know, school fees, they have a school as well. I mean, we're going against Goliaths. We're going against people that have massive, massive money that are going around the world convincing people to convert to Islam. And it's just like, you know, us small guys, atheists and ex-Muslims that are doing this work, you know, basically for the better world. And we don't believe in a hereafter. Those guys, they believe they're going to get reimbursed for whatever good they do. We believe we're going to do it. We're doing it for our kids and for the people that are coming after us so that they don't have to live in a world. And for other people that even are living today, so they can live in a world, a better world, right? One where people don't justify killing someone just because they left the religion, you know?
Yeah, like a lot of people don't get it. Like they say, what you want people to hate Muslims, you want there to be Muslim bans, you want Muslims to be like, you want Islam to be not allowed. I'm like, no. I'm just debunking Islam. And my goal, I want Islam gone, but mine is the most respectful goal ever. Like, I want people to be able to debunk Islam so that in a few centuries or whenever Islam is gone, I want Islam to be, my plan for getting rid of Islam is through information over the course of centuries, over the course of generations, through information, through dialogue. And even this is fair. It's as fair as you can get it, you know? And how much better can this be? You know, this is one that respects everybody's rights. And really, if Islam is gone, it's through information. And even this, just saying this, Muslims are threatened by it. They're scared of it. They think it's Islamophobic, you know? Like, even that is, like, considered, like, terrible to them, you know? Like, my friend, you know, he's Muslim. He hit me up on Facebook. He's like, bro, you got to stop this stuff, man. Like, it's not good, man. You know, I mean, it's not good for you, but it really bothers me too, man.
You're pretty open on your Facebook with your real name and everything.
Right? Yeah. And it's God, where was I going with this?
He's like, your friend said you have to stop doing this, bro.
Yeah, why did I mention that? So he wanted me to kind of stop and shit, man.
While you're thinking about that, did James Essie, another very generous donation, did either of you like the rap group Soldiers of Allah? The song Fake Scholars is fire. I used to listen to like Dean Squad, and I don't know if I listened to Soldiers of Allah. No, I don't remember now. I used to listen to Cat Stevens when he made his halal music, Yusuf Islam, Zayn Bika. I used to listen to I think my favorite was that Malaysian group. What are they called now? Rayhan, something like that. Oh my god!
I didn't listen to them, but I remember like sometime around like 2002 or something, I discovered them, or 2004 or something. And actually, that song, the song Jihad, that song up until a month ago, when I had to get a new phone, I had that song like saved on my phone, and I was still kind of listening to it. You know, because I'm a hip hop junkie, and like even though like the just lyrics are disgusting. And the ideology, and they represent something completely disgusting. It still made my head bob. It's still hip hop, bro. I can still appreciate the beat and the lyrical flow and all that, you know. So
yeah,
but
I want to say one more thing about this this kind of nasty idea. This is a good quote. Tafsir for 9:23. Allah commands shunning the disbelievers, even if they're one's parents or children, and prohibits taking them as supporters if they choose disbelief over faith. There's a kind of really disturbing quote, which I'm trying to remember where I heard it. But anyways, it's in the Tafsir for one of these surah. I think it's Surah 9, of course. It has to be. Surah 9 is probably the most violent verse in the Quran, where basically Ali said to Muhammad and that, you know, give me my, you know, after the Battle of Badr, you know, you give me my family member and we'll give Omar his relative. And we will behead our own family members that were fighting against us, not Muslim family members, obviously. But it's just like that. And because why? What was his motivation? To show them that faith is stronger than blood. And this was actually one of the criticisms of the non-Muslims, that they said Islam breaks our families. because to them, like, look at Abu, excuse me, look at Abu Talib. Abu Talib was the most kind, generous, like, he deserved the title Kareem. He was a good man that took care of his nephew. He took care of Muhammad, his nephew. He was his uncle. And, you know, no matter what people were doing to Muhammad, to the point where his whole tribe, right, was boycotted and they were starving. And according to the hadith, they were eating the bark of trees. This man, what he did for Muhammad, and apparently according to Sunni hadith, he's still in the hellfire and his brains are boiling. He has the least punishment in hellfire. Like, it just shows you how perverted and messed up the religion is, that a good man that took care of Muhammad, mm-hmm. because that was his value. That was his traditional values that he had, his Arab pride, his pride in taking care of the family and taking care of and he protected Muhammad, and to the point that when he died, that's when the abuse got really bad for Muhammad. Up to the point where Abu Talib was alive, he was safe, man. He could do whatever he wanted. He could say what he wanted. He could bash the gods. He could do blasphemy of the idols. And then Muhammad came with this religion that says, now we will kill you guys if you don't believe I'm the prophet. Now, I don't want to over exaggerate this. Islam, I never believed as a Muslim that Islam says that you should kill your non-Muslim family members, or you should be rude to them, or nasty or obnoxious to them. Rather, I wanted my Ismaili father, who was in the wrong sect, I wanted him to convert to Sunni Islam. I wanted my mom, who wasn't that religious, to become a religious Muslim. I wanted her to wear hijab. She didn't wear hijab. I wanted her to give up her bank job and sell the mortgage and get like a halal mortgage. So I was kind to my Muslim family members. And I wasn't like, even to the non-Muslims that I knew, I wasn't harsh and abusive to them. I didn't see Islam that way. So everybody sees Islam differently. We're not talking about what all Muslims believe. We're talking about what the religion teaches. I just to make that clear, because I never saw Islam like, only if they were against the religion, then I would be against them. But if they were like, you know, because there's another verse in the Quran that says, if you know, to the non-Muslims, that, you know, they don't kick you out of your homes and blah, 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 you can be nice to them, right? So just to make that clear. Are you here? Hello?
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say to that?
anything to say?
Okay, let's talk about identity politics then. Let's talk about, you've mentioned identity politics a lot. You said, you know, you talked about BLM, you talked about, you know, the Muslims as a majority versus ex-Muslims as a minority. Do you think identity politics are important to you, to play identity politics? Because ex-Muslim, even the title ex-Muslim, it's identity politics. We're saying we're an oppressed group from among this, you know, this bigger majority. What do you think about that?
Yeah, about that, like, a lot of times people say, why do you, you're using this ex-Muslim label, you're identifying with this, you're making this your whole identity. I'm like, no, I'm just ex-Muslim is just a label that describes this particular thing I'm talking about. You know, ex-Muslim is just easier than saying I once believed in Islam, but no longer are. You know, so it's like, and the only reason I'm talking about it is because I've got social media and I've got things to say about it. This isn't my identity. I don't talk about this in real life. I don't, with the exception of stuff like this, like podcasts or interviews or YouTube videos, it's always words. It's always typed words. It's text. It's never like actual sound that comes out of my mouth. Like, you know, with the exception of this.
Do you have a blog or anything you want to share? James is asking as well. Do you have anything like that or no?
I do, but I don't want
to. Yeah, you don't want to connect it to yourself, right?
Yeah. It might kind of reveal.
Okay, that's fine. Don't worry about it. I can send it to him privately after.
Yeah. There you go. Cool. So about the identity, it's like, you know, for me, I'm lucky enough to where it's not this thing, the ex-Muslim thing. It's not this thing that dominates me. But for other people, like, you know, they've lost their families and the only people they know are ex-Muslims. The only time they hang out are at ex-Muslim meetups. you know? So maybe for them, it might be more of an outward thing. They're always at, every time they're at a gathering, it's at an ex-Muslim gathering. Or every time they hang out with people outside of work, it's ex-Muslims.
It's part of the healing process, though, I think, is when you lose all of your, like, I mean, one of the worst things that happened to me, I don't want to say worst things that happened to me, sounds like over dramatic, but I mean, okay, I'll just say it. One of the worst things that happened to me is I lost pretty much all my friends when I left Islam. I lost like hundreds of freaking friends. I mean, you got to wonder what type of friends they were. They all like, they don't want anything to do with me anymore. But I had a lot of friends. I had a lot of contacts. I had a lot of job contacts. I had a lot of like networking that was going on. There was so many things going on in the Muslim community. And I just like, I'm cut off from all of that now. Right. And I mean, theoretically, they might still like engage with me if I engage with them. I personally don't feel comfortable because of, I know what I'm doing puts me at a greater disadvantage than them, because there's always, you know, like, I don't know if you know, I was basically canceled. Do you know about the story of how that happened to me?
No.
Yeah, basically, I before the word canceled came out, I had Muslims call up one of the companies I was working at, and I think maybe two companies I was working at, and they told the company to fire me. And they said, oh, this guy's, I don't even know exactly what they said. I think they said this guy's a bigot or something. But basically they didn't fire me and it didn't work out. They didn't, but they tried to cancel me. So, and it was all because of my activism. So because of that reason, I don't really feel comfortable. I mean, you guys probably all know what happened with Ijaz and, you know, that whole doxing thing. And I that's what I worry about. You know, I worry about, like, how did they find out where I was working at? Someone somehow had some information. I told somebody and they told someone else because I didn't have this information public. Somehow they found out where I worked, and I had one guy threaten to dox me. So it's just like, I don't want anything to do with the Muslim community either. It's just unfortunate. You know, the faith gets in the way. Unfortunately, it's not like, I don't think the Christian community is like that, because they don't, I don't know. I don't think they have this wala and bara and this like enemies of, maybe they do have enemies of God, but then more mature about it, and they don't, I don't know, man. It's just like night and day, some, you know, in some ways. So I'm,
I remember this girl, she was Muslim, and she said, hey, you should also criticize other religions, like especially Judaism. And it's like, first of all, oh, because you're an atheist, you know, so you should talk about other religions. It's like, no, we're talking about this religion because it's specifically problematic to us. And it's like, there's no ex-Jews of North America. Why? Because if you were to say that, hey, this thing in the Torah, I don't believe in it, and it's made up, or I don't believe in Judaism, people aren't going to say, what? Oh my God, how could you? How could you say, you know, there's something wrong in the Torah? How could you defame the Torah? This is God's direct word, because it wasn't God's direct word, you know? So it's like Judaism doesn't have this freaking design flaw in it that Islam does. And speaking of design flaw, oh my God, there's a huge design flaw in Islam. So on one hand, they say, okay, well, you know, the apostasy ruling is only because, you know, you can leave Islam. You just can't talk about it. You got to keep it a secret because it causes corruption, you know? And like, you know, just, you'll be fine if you just, you know, if you just keep it to yourself, everything will be fine. But then at the same time, like, Muhammad also said, you know, if, you know, just live your life, you'll be fine. But at the same time, Muhammad said, hey, if a Muslim is not following Islam correctly, give them nasiha. Counsel them, ask them what's going on. So basically they're telling us, all right, you live your life, you know, all right, go ahead, shave your beard, stop praying, you know, and you know, eat your pork, do whatever you want, and you'll be fine. But then, like, if people are truly following Islam, then if they see you doing that, they're gonna say, hey, what's going on? I haven't seen you in the mosque in a while. What's going on? I saw you shave your beard. So at this point, you know, you're supposed to just lie and just say, oh, no, I'm a bad Muslim, you know? So is this what you're starting? And then on top of that, the Quran says that if you say you're Muslim, but you're not, you're a munafiq.
Yeah.
You're the worst creature in the world.
Yeah.
So like, what kind of fucking religion is this shit? You know, like talk about design.
I was just about to say that Islam creates the very problem of hypocrisy that it so strongly condemns, because you can't come out as a non-ex-Muslim. You'll be killed, or you'll be shunned, or you'll be kicked out of your family, or you'll be cut off by your parents, or you won't get funding. And one of the most common questions I get asked over and over again is by people that found out that Islam is not true and they don't know what to do. Should I tell my family? I want to tell my mom and dad, but I don't know how they're going to react. So I'm working on a project now to, it's going to be an ebook, or it's going to be like an article that talks about what to do when you leave Islam. You know, what's the different strategies you can take? Should you tell your family? What do you have to think about? I have a few videos on that already, but like, do you have any advice for people in that situation?
That want to preach to their family members?
That left Islam, not preach necessarily, but just be honest with them. And they don't want to pretend anymore. They don't want to, you know, fake pray.
Oh, right. So they want to reveal to their family members.
They want to be authentic. Yeah.
They're not necessarily promoting their lack of Islam. I would say don't say shit because you're about to get your head cut off. No. I mean, the relationship is most likely. Look, for me, I'm lucky. I'm privileged. You know, I haven't lost my family members. You know, my family, they don't really like it, but they love me regardless. I'm one of the few lucky ones, you know. And a lot of times people will use that, especially liberals. Like, what are you talking about? I saw you with your family the other day, man. Blah, blah, blah. So anyway, you know, I would say, like, really, you have to see what kind of family you have, and you have to weigh the risks, you know, like, you know, is it better to just pretend, you know, than like tell them why, you know, tell them why you got a girlfriend, or tell them why you have a boyfriend, you know, or why you're dating, you know, why you're looking at men instead of women, you know, or why you shave your beard, or why you stop praying. Yeah. You know, so I would say, as far as advice, I mean, really feel them out. And, man, I would just say, hey, listen, you know, your religion says, hey, there's no compulsion, you know, so, and hey, this is just what I have determined. And, you know, I would really appreciate to just accept it, and not have me. And not try to get me to come back, and really not change anything. And I won't bring this up. You know, I have no desire to make you deconvert. You know, I just want us to be the same. And I just want to live my life the way I see fit, without you judging it, and without you changing your opinion about me or changing our relationship.
Yeah.
I still love you no matter what. I still love you, even though you're Muslim, even though you follow a man that said we deserve to die. I still love you. And so why can't you love me for simply not liking this guy that says I deserve to die? You can do that, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty low bar for them to.
It's such a low fucking bar.
Like,
the bars are so goddamn low. Like me just asking these imams to take 30 seconds and just say, hey, don't be intolerant. Like, that's the lowest fucking bar you can think of. But these people can't even do that shit. And that tells you everything you need to know about Islam, and everything you need to know about why ex-Muslims exist. Mm-hmm. Hook, line, sinker, bam. That's it. Checkmate. What else you got, homie? What else you got?
Yeah, no, you said it well. And I think, I mean, that's basically, there's not much more to say than that. And you have a pretty low bar. I'm lucky, like you, my family's really liberal. And they don't care, I guess. Not don't care. They do care, but they don't mind, or they tolerate the fact that I left Islam and whatever. They're like,
It's not that they don't care, they don't mind. Yeah, exactly.
So they're like, whatever, right? But obviously we're the minority here, and most people they don't have that situation. Okay, so just to wrap up, any other things you want to mention before we end it?
Let's see. Let me just take a look at my notes. I've got about scholars. I was trying to tell. Here's the thing, right? So you go, if you approach a scholar and be like, hey, look, you know, a lot of Muslims have been referring me to a scholar to bring my arguments, because they start arguments with me and then it ends with, hey, we've reached the end of my knowledge. You go talk to a scholar will prove you right. And I'm just here. I want to present to you, you know, some of these things, some of these debunkments, You know, if you say that to most scholars, they'll just be like, nah, man, I don't have the time for that. Because Muslims always have time to talk about Islam when they're doing the talking, but they don't have time to listen.
Do you think that's really the case? Because I think if you went to meet an imam, I mean, I met a bunch of imams. I had 3 or 4 different calls with different people, and they actually took the time. I had one guy who was a good friend of mine who knew me for many, many, many years, and he had a private session with a Sufi sheikh, and he actually invited me to his paid private session. I don't even know how much money he paid for this. And he's like, yeah, come sit and let's talk to the sheikh and bring all your questions. So I printed off all of this stuff. I was so excited. I sat down with him, and he was just like, it didn't go well because he was getting mad at me for some of the things I was
saying. Yeah, let me answer that question.
But he did spend time with me, though.
You can find someone that is willing to answer your questions, because they come in with this. They're like, oh yeah, yeah, this guy, yeah, he's got some questions, and I'll just answer them, you know. And these are all questions that are really easy to answer, and like I'll explain everything to him, and like really explain all these questions and all this stuff, and really dispel all his worries and doubts. But in order, like, if you really said, hey, listen, I need you to not ask me questions. The minute you sit down with them, they'll say, okay, tell me about your background. Are you atheist? Are you Christian or what? What the fuck does that got to do with it? You listen, right? Don't ask about my beliefs. You know, listen to my criticisms. You're the ones that are saying, yeah, yeah, anything that's – bring it to me, man. Whatever you got, bring it, man. I can listen to it. So it's like, are you willing to sit down and let me go through this spiel of this specific argument? You know, like even just taking one specific thing, right? You know, it takes them to you need them to follow kind of a train of thought, you know, and they won't do that. They're not going to sit down and listen for like
I don't know. I disagree, because like I said, it wasn't just him. I had Eddie from the Dean Show. I talked to him. I swear to God, I talked to Eddie for like probably 5 to 10 hours on the phone.
Okay. If you can find any Muslim scholar that is actually willing to just listen to an ex-Muslim and not talk to him, you know, let me know. I think there are people
like that. I had a guy that was a professor at a university in the US. He teaches Islam. Mm-hmm. He studied philosophy and Islam, and he's teaching Islam at university. He's a friend of a friend. Actually, he's a friend of mine from university. He actually met him. Mm-hmm. And he talked to me for a couple of hours, and he wasn't able to kind of, you know, deal
with
my...
Was he willing to listen?
Yeah, these people did listen. These people... I had multiple people tell me to go to Yasir Qadhi's Al-Maghrib class, which there was no way in hell I was going to go to a class with like 150 freaking 300 Muslims, and I'm going to like raise my hand, Sheikh, you're wrong about that. Sheikh, I don't agree with that. Sheikh, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I'm going to do that. Like, dude, if you want me to talk to Yasir Qadhi, get me a private phone call with him and I'll talk to him. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go to the class where he's giving me these prepared slides that, like, I probably read most of that stuff already.
Yeah, again, that's the thing. Is like they're not willing. These people that are saying this, they're not willing to think about, like, hey, it's not you listening to what Yasir Qadhi has to say. It's about you presenting what's in your head.
Yeah.
You know, like I've got all these, I've got so much, I got pages of this stuff that I wrote, and it's about like these Muslim scholars think that like, oh yeah, he's just going to list off questions and I'm going to answer them. It's like, no, you need to sit down and listen and let me take you through my thinking. That's tough. That's not going to happen.
I think it happens.
You know, if you can try to find, honestly, like I would actually.
Because I did it so many times, dude. I did it so many times that I'm just like, listen, these imams you think you want me to talk to, they don't know anything. They don't know about the Greek and embryology connection, for example, like Galen and embryology. They don't know how, you know, Muhammad copied from Jewish myths. They don't know any of these things. You want me to talk to an imam that he's not engaging with these issues. And frankly, I would destroy him. Like I had this one guy, Arij Anwar, who is an imam, who backstabbed me. He said he basically was making notes on what we were discussing. Then after we had the conversation, he went on Facebook and he's like, yeah, Abdullah Samir left Islam because fasting and praying was too tough for him. And I'm like, what kind of stupid comment? Like, he's like, yeah, I made notes when I was discussing with him. I was the imam and he told me these things. I'm like, dude, I left Islam because it doesn't make sense. And I had like a freaking 100 issues there. And I told him, okay, let's have a debate, public debate. And he was like, you know, didn't respond. Of course he didn't respond because he knows I have good points. Yet in public, he's slandering me. And then he went on for now. Fareed got him to go on his channel and talk about me and say, I left Islam. Again, the saying I left Islam because I didn't want to pray and fast. It's so hilarious
They need that. They have to do that. Once you get past the sort of, you know, how they use it to shut you down and how they use it to shut other people down. Once you get past that, it's comical and you almost feel sorry for them because I feel so sorry for some of my family members and stuff. You know, like we're in a group chat with my cousins and stuff, you know, and they were having a discussion on the BLM stuff. And one of my cousins said, I forgot what they were saying, but hey, they're saying, hey, listen, that kind of stuff, that has to be up to the Black community to decide for themselves. Non-Black people don't have a place in that conversation. And if they do, they should actually listen because blah, blah, blah. And then that was my chance. I said, hey, look, hey, man, would you say the same thing about Muslims? Are you qualified to say that ex-Muslims aren't marginalized? Is there anything like, I was basically, you know, putting the ball back in his court. And like right when that happened, you know, like two or three people left the group chat and they're like, damn it, I'm sick of your atheist anti-Islam stuff. We didn't create this group chat. We created this group chat for families to talk together and like be connected, not for you to bash our religion and to promote your atheism. I'm like, bro, what the fuck is atheism has to do with this? They love blaming atheism on this stuff. And like they don't, like if they actually stopped and asked enough questions and listened, like for me, like I wasn't an atheist when I left Islam. It wasn't, hey, this thing in the Quran is incorrect. There's this mistake in the Quran. Hence, there's no God. It was no, there's a mistake in the Quran. Hence, that's not my God. Hence, God never wanted any religion. God never sent these religions. God, you know, there's a deistic type of God, you know, but they like to blame it on atheism because it takes the heat off of their scriptures, you know, it takes the heat off of the perfection of their prophet, you know, and because they can always say, oh, well, the reason this guy found all these errors in my religion, and the reason this guy found like all these supposed bad things that our prophet did is because he was always an atheist and he kind of read it through his atheist filter and he had confirmation bias. He didn't never believed in God. So that's what it is. And it's so sad. You know, like I honestly feel sorry for a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know,
I had a similar experience to you where I had, here's the funny thing in the group chat for the family, you know, someone brings up religion. Of course, it was one of my most religious family members. I'm not going to say who. And it was actually a video of this sheikh talking about how basically the sun that never sets, Norway, is mentioned. Yeah. Some ridiculous like video he made where he says...
Oh, I've seen it. He's got like kind of a red beard. He's kind of white looking.
Yeah. So I actually
nice
did...
Nice guy, by the way.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy. Anyway, so this video was shared in the family chat. So now this is someone's bringing up religion. So I just responded. I'm like, yeah, this is silly because... You know, Dhul Qarnayn went east and west. He didn't go north, right? He didn't go to north. So I'm like, that's really debunked. But I shared my video and one of my aunties got mad and she left the group. And she's like, why are you spreading your extremism or something, right? I'm like atheism is not extremism. It's just a different belief, a belief in no God. You believe in a God. I believe in no God. It's not extreme. It's just different.
Right? Yeah, we're just having a discussion here.
And I just said, okay, fine. I won't talk. And I actually said this. I'm not going to talk about Islam, but then you guys don't talk about Islam either. And they agree. Because it's not fair otherwise, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
You know what I mean? We won't talk about religion. And, you know, my family's cool enough. So the majority of them are like, yeah, that's cool. We won't talk about religion because they don't care. There's a couple of religious people that want to like push and make everybody religious. And I used to be one of them. Now I'm not. But like, I don't like people, you know, pushing the religious stuff in there when it's, again, like the same thing. It's not as religious. If you want to bring up religion, fine. But then don't get mad at me if I'm going to bring it up. Before we end, there's a question.
There's for a you. Question. Yeah. Nathan, hey, Jamal, what are your thoughts on Christianity? Fuck Christianity. Those are my thoughts.
That's not very nice.
I know. But you know me, bro. You know how I do it. It's a BS religion and it's problematic and it needs to be debunked and I'm glad people are debunking it. I actually talk smack about it myself on my personal page and on my public ex-Muslim page. You know, I debunk Christianity, even though I don't have to. you know, even though people are saying, well, why don't you talk about Christianity too? I do it just, I don't have to, you know, because my ex-Muslim stuff is a response to debunking Islam. But I debunk Christianity because it is another BS ideology.
What, why, is it the same, is it just as bad as Islam?
No, not just as bad. Not just as bad for apostates, you know, definitely not just as bad. Because, again, you know, who's really, even in the West, like Western ex-Muslims, do their experiences, you know, or ex-Christians, I'm not trying to, like, you know, dismiss some of the stuff they go through, because, yeah, they go through a lot of terrible shit, you know.
Yeah.
But compared to ex-Muslims, it's not even close. You
know? Yeah, I think ex-Mormons have a more similar experience.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And ex-Jehovah's Witnesses maybe as well, to ex-Muslims. Because I find many ex-Mormons actually relate with ex-Muslims really well. They're like, mm-hmm. yeah, I was shunned. And shunning, they call it shunning. They have this thing where they like cut you off, right?
Mm-hmm. And also, black ex-Christians, black American ex-Christians, very similar to ex-Muslims.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, because then the sort of black American culture, you know, God is really ingrained. Because if you think about it, right, just imagine, you know, from the beginning, you're a slave and you're just like, this is my life. This is the life of my children. This is the life of their children. A slave to this person, doing whatever the hell he wants. This guy can come and rape my wife whenever he wants, you know, make me come work whenever he wants. This life sucks. So there has to be a God. There has to be an afterlife. You know, so like all these things are so ingrained in, kind of into the, into not everybody, but within the African-American community, within the black American community, I wouldn't be surprised if these ideas are very ingrained, you know? So anyone that disbelieves or doesn't believe in God, you know, I think that it's similar to ex-Muslims.
Okay. That's interesting. That's an interesting reflection. All right. So that's been a wrap. It's been a great show. Thank you, Jamal. I'm glad we finally did this. And you know, this was a great conversation. Lots of really interesting topics and talking points. This is a funny thing. It's the first time we ever talked. I didn't get to meet you at, you know, CafeCon or whatever, one of those ex-Muslim conferences, but hopefully it'll happen one day and I will get to meet you and all of the good guys.
Yeah, because you never go.
I never go. Yeah, it's kind of tough for me, but yeah, I'm going to try to go for the next one, hopefully. For those of you who are listening to the podcast, please do leave a review for it so we can get it up there in the top 10 podcasts on Islam. If you're new to the channel, please consider joining the channel. Just click on join now below. And I guess it was bad timing for me to go live at the same time as Mufti Abu Layth, same time as Apostate Prophet, and the same time as I think even David Wood was online at one point. So it's like too many people online at the same time competing for airtime. But it was still a good good session, good crowd, good audience here. And thank you guys. Thank you everyone for joining. Thank you, Jamal. You have the mic for any last words you want to give, and then I'm going to shut it off.
That's it. Yeah, remember the final nail in the coffin is making this request. Test it out. If anybody says that ex-Muslims are not marginalized and that ex-Muslim groups, you know, have unfounded claims, then just say, here's the proof. Most Muslims would not send out a message to tell their community that there's this problem and to stop it. But they would do it with other minorities. And if anyone says that this isn't true, that Muslims would oblige to this request, tell them to test it out. And tell them that if they refuse to test it out, that they can no longer they can no longer disagree with the claim rightfully. Their position is incorrect. That is it. That's me signing off. Thank you so much, Abdullah, for having me. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Peace out.